at the buzzer. McBird on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it in with no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Cats and Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to a special edition of Courtside with Cats and Coach G. On Monday, all four of the coaches in this year's Final Four made appearances on ESPN Radio, with Frank Martin, Mark Few, and Roy Williams joining Mike and Mike, while Dana Altman joined Russillo and Cannell. Now you can hear all four of those conversations in one place, here on Courtside. We'll lead it off with South Carolina's Frank Martin, who joined Mike and Mike on Monday morning.
Well, we've gotten to know him a little bit over the years, and we had a really, really good conversation with him last week, and so I felt really good for Frank Martin, Mike, yesterday, watching him lead South Carolina through Madison Square Garden to an improbable trip to the Final Four, and the coach of South Carolina is back with us on Mike and Mike. Congratulations, Frank.
Thank you, guys. I wish you guys would ask me to come on just a little bit later today. I'm a little beat up.
Well, listen, we appreciate your doing this. And let me ask you, you told a great story when you were on with us last week about all the letters that you wrote when you wanted to go from the high school level to the college level and coaching, and that only Coach K had written you back a handwritten letter. But that story stuck with me. And so I wonder, as you were cutting down those nets yesterday in Madison Square Garden, with that as the backdrop, what thoughts were going through your mind?
Just, Greeny, thankful, like my high school coach. I was a bad player. I was a left tackle that wanted to play basketball. And my basketball coach never gave up on me. And even though I couldn't play a lick, he believed in me. And he stuck with me, ended up hiring me to coach basketball with him. And then Bob Huggins, who's like a brother to me. He's taken me under his wing, helped me throughout my collegiate career. And I said this story the other day, when he took the West Virginia job, he could have done what every other coach in the country would have done. And that's he would have taken the assistants. I would have hired a brand new staff, and that whole recruiting class, Beasley, Walker, Poland, all those guys would have gone to West Virginia. Instead, he took everyone and he said, it's Frank's turn. It's time to help him. I'll be okay. So I kept the staff, and he hired new guys and made sure that all those kids stayed behind and helped me get my career going. And incredible people I've been around my whole career.
So here you've taken a 10-win program and made it to the Final Four in just five seasons. So in this journey in getting your team and the type of players you wanted to get together, what were a couple of the most important steps for you in getting where you are now?
The first step was that actually the first kid I ever signed here, which was Michael Carrera. He wanted to come to K-State. I didn't have a scholarship. When I got hired here, I called him, and he immediately he said, I've always wanted to play for you. So he comes, and he wasn't quite good enough, but he had courage and a heart like there's no tomorrow. And we started to build on his determination, his desire. And then we landed our first big-time recruit and the young man that the whole country is getting to see now, Sedaris Thornwell. Hmm. And Sedaris could have gone to the Blue Bloods, and instead he came here, believed in our vision, believed in building something with his name on it, and took a chance. Because I couldn't show him, like, hey, we did this 5 years ago. We're going to do it again. I couldn't show him that. He had to believe in it, and it's continued going from there. And then it's been the trust that we've built in that locker room, the way those kids believe in each other, and their fearlessness approach to the next day, regardless of winning and losing games. The next day, that's all they want to do is go out and do it again. And then the first time, I think the game that gave our team, our program, our fans, everyone confidence that this could happen. Was when Sedaris was a freshman and we beat Kentucky at home. That was the first step to kind of making everyone think that this can happen one day.
And then it was Thornwell yesterday leading your team to the Final Four, making big shot after big shot. Frank Martin is with us. And anyone who watched your run through this tournament knows you are the definition of a second-half team. In four games, you outscored your opponents by 54 points in the second halves. Why, Frank, what is the key to playing big in the second half?
You know, Greeny, I don't know how to do stuff with smoke and mirrors and trick people. I just know how to work, and that's what I try to instill in our guys. And you know, we go in the weight room. I'm not going to say I never say we work harder than anybody because I don't know how hard everyone else works, but I know we work hard, and we go in the weight room year round. It's relentless. My strength coach, Scott Greenewalt, who's with us in Cincinnati, is the best in the business. And then we practice. We compete. We go against each other. I'm not into all this. I've always said this. People would complain of tired legs usually because they sit on the couch too much. You know, the guys that go that are in great shape, they're always wired to go. And we do that. And then we've created a motto with this team saying, don't let go of the rope. And they haven't let go of the rope. I don't care how hard the game gets. Them kids hold on to that rope as hard as they can.
Can you explain that? When I heard you giving the answer when the kid from SI asked you the question about your second half, and you said you asked your players about if they ever were in the tug of war. And can you go through that? I thought that was a great story.
Yeah, we lost a real hard game to Alabama at home. Then we went on the road and lost again. And, you know, and our guys, I can tell, they were a little shell-shocked. And I told them, I said, hey, man, listen, we haven't been practicing as well. We obviously lost a couple games, so we're dealing with adversity. I said, adversity's part of the deal. It's not all red as roses. There's going to be difficult moments in every single season, every year of your life. And I asked them, I said, have any of you guys ever been in the tug of war? Some guys said yes, some laughed, some had no idea what I was talking about. And I said, well, this is what a way of tug of war works. And it starts. And then you got two groups of people pulling in opposite directions. And sometimes your side starts getting pulled instead of, pulled in the wrong direction. And every once in a while, somebody lets go of the rope. And if one person lets go of the rope, your team's done. You're over. It's over with. You're going over the line. So the whole thing here is, I don't care how difficult it gets, you have to hold on to that rope. And that was something I shared with them at that moment, and they kind of took it to heart. And it's something we use in huddles. We talk about it in the locker room. And I don't know if it helps us in second halves, but those kids are not letting go of that rope right now.
It was a terrific second half performance yesterday, and on your going, taking that rope with you all the way to Phoenix in the Final Four, where you will face Gonzaga. So I'm just curious, how much time do you give yourself to celebrate? This is an enormous accomplishment. People look at Final Fours, and they go on resumes and all that kind of stuff. How much time did you give yourself to celebrate that win before you started looking at tape of Gonzaga?
Greeny, I've yet to really sleep. It's and not from partying and celebrating. You know, 20 years ago, who knows what I would have done. now it's kind of lay down, and I'm just staring at the ceiling all night, and you really can't get deep sleep, and it's just an amazing feeling. And I'm just sitting there saying, why me? Why am I on this ride? And just marveling at the guys that are playing for me right now, the Michael Beasleys and the Jacob Pullens and the Denny Clementas that played for me at K-State and all the kids, whether it's Udonis Haslam, Steve Blake, guys that are real good players that dealt with me when I was young and mature. I had no idea how to coach. I just knew how to yell back then. And they put up with me and helped me become a better coach. And you just lay there and you think about all these things and it's like, wow, how lucky am I? Sometime today, I'm going to start studying Gonzaga and get back on track. Our guys are off in practice today, so there's no need for us to be prepped up today. I feel like a football coach now, Greeny. I can celebrate a win on a Sunday night, relax on Monday, and start getting ready for next Saturday. It's You know, I like how these football guys do it. Maybe I should have taken that path instead of basketball.
Yeah. Stayed with the left tackle. Big money in the left tackle position. Hey, real quick, not only you and the team, but so many South Carolina fans there. I mean, do you understand what I mean? Your reaction to their reaction? You got our buddy Darius Rucker. He's going to join us in a couple of minutes. Obviously, a huge South Carolina super fan, really. He's shedding a tear after the win. I mean, the effect you're having on the South Carolina people has been really incredible.
That's the perfect example. You know, we're a small state. We're not an overpopulated state. We're a very loyal state, very committed to the people, to making it right, hardworking, blue-collar state. And Darius is the perfect example of what our fan base is about. It's incredible. I mean, everyone wants to talk about our football Saturdays. Obviously, I love it, being a football guy. It's as good as I've ever been around. But if you go to volleyball, it's sold out. Dawn Staley, what she's built here in women's basketball, lead the country in attendance 3 or 4 years in a row. And they're planning to go to the Final Four later today. You go to volleyball, sold out. Soccer, sold out. It's incredible. And now our fans have just completely bought into our guys and our team. And when you see Darius, all the success that he's had in his career, the ups, the downs, the good, and for a man that's experienced so much to sit there and shed tears, just tells you the kind of meaning that this university has to this community and the people in this state. And it's powerful, man. It's powerful to be able. I told our players after the game, the scoreboard, the wins, the scores, all that's awesome. When you make grown people fly across the country to watch you play, and you make them cry tears of joy, that's powerful, and that's what my guys have done.
That's exactly right. Frank, that's extremely well said. Congratulations. It has been a delight to watch what you guys have done, and we look forward to seeing you next weekend in Phoenix. Good luck.
Thanks, Frank.
Thanks, guys.
Here's Gonzaga's Mark Few with Mike and Mike.
Mark Few is with us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Coach, congratulations, and thanks very much for getting up early for us today. How are you?
I'm great. It's been a fun 24, 36 hours or whatever the heck it's been.
I have to believe it has. And so
it's early out west.
No doubt it is. And so, again, we really appreciate you doing this for us at this early hour for you. Let's talk about that. The statement, I didn't have a monkey on my back, all that sort of thing. Yours was a team that had, however you want to look at it, had been so close so many times and had been so good for so long to finally take this next step where the program had never been and where you'd never been. You've had 36 hours to let it soak in. What does it mean to you right now?
I there's just a powerful feeling of, just grace and thankfulness for everybody that's been with you through it all. I mean, I just had flashbacks, all the former players dating all the way back to 99, were part of building the foundation of this thing. It didn't happen, overnight. And I think that's what's a little bit different maybe about our situation and you know, would make me cringe when everybody wanted a Final Four just to justify, you know, whatever. Because there's also been some teams that and programs that haven't been very good that have got hot, won four games and got to a Final Four. And I don't think they could in any way, shape, or form hold up to the kind of the run that we've had this last 20 years. So, I mean, this has been like organically built from the ground up year by year, and it's pretty cool to kind of be able to cross this thing off the list, and hopefully we can kind of cross one more thing off the list here next weekend.
Yeah, looking at that over the years, your first year on the staff, you won 4 Division I games, and now you're in the Final Four. At what point, you mentioned the 20 years, at what point as you were building this program did you think – year in and year out, you could be a team that could make a run in the NCAA tournament. Was there a specific year where you really said, from here forward, we should be able to be doing this?
First of all, that first year, I think we played 4 non-Division I teams on that schedule. And let me tell you, fellas, we were in some barn burners with them. it was some knockdown dragouts. I think we won 8 games that year, and 4 of them were against non-Division Ones. But those were not easy wins either. So we just started year by year, just trying to get a little bit better, a little bit better. And I think once we got into the Morrison years there, and a Turioff team in there, that we were good enough to compete, to get to a Final Four, to get to the final weekend. I don't know if we were good enough to win it. The Olenek team that we lost, actually didn't lose. I mean, Wichita State just beat us. They played fantastic that night through the whole tournament. I remember getting to a Final Four that year and just, like, watching that game and thinking we would have been fine here. Okay, we could have matched up really well with these teams, and we were good enough to get here and win. So it was probably right in there, whenever that was, 2013 or so.
Yeah, and look, you've had good teams long before that as well. Mike and Mark Few, as they're on their way to the Final Four. And all anyone talks about when they talk about your team right now, and for obvious reasons, is Karnowski, because he's so big and so distinctive looking, and because of your size. But having watched your run through this tournament and much of this season, I would love you to explain to our audience what Nigel Williams-Goss has been for your team, because it has struck me as I've watched you that as he goes, so goes Gonzaga this year.
Oh, my gosh, guys. I mean, the guy is just the ultimate winner. He everything he does, I mean, he's like that quarterback that just infuses everybody on the team with, like, hey, we're gonna make this last drive. We're fine. Just hang with me here. From that, how he approaches practice and individual work and development, he's just so driven and so focused, and nobody talks more on the defensive end than him, which has become contagious and has really been a huge part of us growing that efficiency you were citing at the start here, the defensive efficiency. And then he's confident. He's not afraid to take big shots and big moments and make big plays. And the other thing I say is he fills every little bucket. You get done with the game and you kind of, that Bednight's played all right tonight. And then you just look, well, he had 9 rebounds as a guard. He had 7 assists. He had 3 steals. He guarded the other team's best perimeter player. He banged in a couple threes. He's got a really interesting, knack for making that mid-range floater off 1 foot, off 2 foot. He's very adept at that. And he just brings a lot of things to the table. When you're around him a lot, you just tend to appreciate it more and more.
So for you and this team, uncharted territory now. You get a week. You win Saturday. You have till Saturday. So what happens in that time between rest and practice? And let's be honest, even though you have a very experienced team, there's still, young men who are all on social media, and a lot of people are going to continue to tell them how good they are and what a great run they're on. How do you deal with all of that?
Mike, this team's been just laser focused all year. And, they were already talking about it as we were kind of wandering out of the locker room Saturday evening in San Jose, like, hey, let's have some fun tonight and, relax on Sunday, and then, Monday, let's get back after it. We're not done yet. And I thought that was, what a great thing to hear as a coach. And I don't think they're satisfied, and I think they got their eyes on the ultimate prize. And the one thing that they've done this year that's just been crazy, guys, is like, we haven't had a bad night. I mean, even the BYU game, we shot out of the gates 20-4 or something, and we just kind of had a bad little 5-minute, 7-minute stretch there in the second half. But they've been just remarkably consistent with their approach and their effort and their intensity. So I expect nothing less. That's what I've seen in, 37 games so far.
For those who don't know, that BYU game, the only game they've lost all the way through. Mike and Mike, another quick moment here with Mark Few, the coach of Gonzaga, on the way to their first Final Four. Did you get it? I assume you had a chance
Can we get the elephant out of the room? Do we need to talk about the Northwestern game? Are we all right with that?
Well,
he's not all right with that.
I'm not all right with it, but I'm not upset
with
you.
I mean, come on, let's not ignore it. Let's just beat it head on. That's kind of how I coach my players.
Well, it was gossip. That was really what drove my question. Nigel Williams-Goss is the guy who beat us, and Jonathan Williams, that kid is unbelievably good. And look, I mean, there's a call in the game. The calls happen, and you know, they're going to get good ones sometimes and bad ones sometimes. I can be upset at the refs. It doesn't make me upset at you for whatever it's worth.
Even though you were, boy, he was upset at you, Mark, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, you know, whatever it is. But that was a good, listen, it was a terrific college basketball game, and I was proud, candidly, after you blew the doors off Northwestern in the first half, that they fought back. I mean, at halftime, I figured that game is over, and I just hope we make it reasonably respectable to not leave the season with sort of a bad taste. And the fact that we came back and made it a game in the second half, I was very proud of. But, you know, you guys were great that day, and you deserved to win.
Yeah, and they were – what a great run they had, and I had a feeling at halftime, and they weren't done. I mean, that was a gritty, gritty, tough team that had shown such resilience all year, and I kind of knew Law and McIntosh would, you know, they weren't going to go down easy. But yeah, it was a great game and a great atmosphere. The fans, Northwestern fans, traveled, and it was cool to see the Gonzaga fans in San Jose. Man, it was on fire down there, and it was. Hopefully it'll be the same in Phoenix.
And then, now, that's not what I thought you were going to say when you said the elephant out of the room. We've been having a debate here all morning long. Who is the most, who in your mind is the most famous Gonzaga alum? Is it John Stockton or is it Bing Crosby?
They wouldn't even make my top three or five. Are you kidding me? Come on. I don't know. I'd start with... I mean, I'm partial to my own guys, Turioff and Morrison and Pangos and, Jeremy Pargo, those types, Kelly Olynyk, Stocks and I, we used to work out 3 or 4 days a week. We're going in the mornings and not as much anymore. But, in fact, we were together a Saturday night after the game. And, I mean, I kill him constantly. He never played in the NCAA tournament. He doesn't even make my top 10.
Now, Bing Crosby did release White Christmas.
Son does, just for reference here. So I got David ranked ahead of John right now on my list.
Wow.
Bing Crosby, for what it's worth, it did release the number one selling record of all time. White Christmas is the best-selling song of all time. Yeah. So it's pretty good.
I believe got kicked out of school, though, too, guys. So, I mean, are we taking in, you know, that aspect of the whole deal? I think he threw a piano out of a second-floor dorm or something. That was
wow, that's good knowledge.
Can we do some research into that, guys? Can we look into that?
That could very well be fake news from the 1950s. I don't know, but that's the legacy.
Well played.
Listen, if so, then Pargo goes to number one. Yeah. Okay, it's that simple.
Exactly.
Before we let you run, and I know you have a million things to do today, you do have a game to play coming up on Saturday. Did you get a chance to watch South Carolina yesterday? You're number one in defensive efficiency. They're number two. But what are your thoughts on the opponent coming up this weekend?
Well, there I was having one of the greatest days ever. Just got back from church, great message, sat down, started watching that game, and just got a sick feeling in my stomach watching their defense. I mean, it was just, like, stifling. And so, I was really happy for Frank, man. He's a really, really good man and just a wonderful guy to be around. But, man, watching their defense was – we got some work to do between now and Saturday, just finding ways, if there is a way, to, you know, consistently score against it. And then they are very opportunistic on the offensive end with Thornwell and just the way they rebound. And they were getting good play out of their bigs yesterday. So I think it's probably going to take the game's going to look a lot more like our West Virginia game than it is like our Xavier or Northwestern game. It'd be nice if it was up in the 90s. I'd be all for it if we want to make a deal there. But it's looking like it's probably going to be in the 40s and 50s or something.
Yeah, first one.
Which is fine. But, you know, that's the cool thing about this team this year. We've won them all sorts of different ways, and we don't mind.
North Carolina coach Roy Williams also joined Greeny and Golic.
Listen, that was one of the most exciting finishes that we've seen in the tournament in an awful long time, and as a result, he is headed back to the Final Four. Roy Williams of North Carolina joins us on Mike and Mike. Congratulations, coach.
You guys doing all right? Because I'm having a real good day today.
I would imagine.
Yes, you are.
You know, everyone was talking after the game about the decision not to call the timeout at the end, and that's the way you coach. But Seth Greenberg was in here earlier this morning, and he went back a couple of minutes before that, and he said the game turned around when you made a decision to go to a 2-3 zone, and you stayed in it just for a couple of possessions, but you're down five, you went to the zone, and it sort of got the momentum going back in your direction. Can you describe your decision to do that and what effect you think it had on the game?
Well, we were having a tough time stopping them in man-to-man. It wasn't anything. It was just brilliant. It's just that I needed to try something else. They were getting the penetration to the basket. De'Aaron Fox had just gone in and laid one up. Isaiah Briscoe had just made one, and we just wanted to try something different, and luckily it was one of those times that things worked out for us.
Sure did, and then obviously the talk how you don't like to call timeouts at the end, you were saying push it, and that's exactly what happened. We were talking about in this tournament, we've seen some bad last shots by teams and wondered about timeouts. This is a no-brainer, no question for you, correct? And this is what your team practices, that you were going no matter what.
Exactly right, Michael, because what we do is we basically have a six-second cutoff. It's 6 seconds or more, we're going to push it down the court, and we do practice that all the time. I mean, try this, guys. We've had 96 practices this year, so I got to think of a lot of things to do if you're going to practice that much. But if it's 5 seconds or below, then we call a timeout, because then you can advance the ball maybe to half court without even the clock running. But we practice that all the time, and it's something our kids feel comfortable about. We had to make sure that Kennedy Meeks got the ball inbounds quickly, and he found Theo, and that was probably a little bit of fortune there, because Joel Berry was just struggling so much, and it was fault, and he was so tough with both ankles hurting, but getting it to Theo. Theo's really good at penetrating, and Theo's a playmaker, and then Big Luke, he knocked in a few shots for us, so it was great.
How many of those 96 practices when you ran that ended in Luke May making making a 12-foot jump shot?
Hey, well, you can't practice everything. Gracious. I can't remember one that Luke has made, but the other guys, we've had a lot of guys make and a lot of guys miss. But I've always thought, and I got it from Coach Smith, I'm not very innovative. I'm a copier. But you should always, in my opinion, you should always try to attack before the defense is set. And, no, it was 7.2 seconds. I mean, several years ago in it's 2009. We had it out with like 4.3 left to play. Didn't call a timeout, went the length of the court. Ty Lawson made a jumper to win it at 4.3, so 7.2 or whatever it was like an eternity for us.
Roy Williams is with us. And let's go back just quickly on Luke May, because you've coached a ton of guys who've gone on and had huge NBA careers. You have pros on your team right now. What does it mean to you as a coach to see this guy who came to your school as a walk-on wind up putting up the performances he did in this regional with the huge game against Butler and the huge game yesterday, and then make a shot that will be remembered by North Carolina basketball fans forever?
Well, you know, Michael, it's the good thing about it is he's such a great kid. He started coming to my camp when he's like a 6th, 7th, 8th grader, something like that. So I saw him every summer, talked to his dad. His dad was a big-time quarterback here for us when I was an assistant coach. And Mark and I had played some golf together down at Wild Dunes 10 years ago. And we've just had a good relationship with him coming to camp. And I kept telling Mark, don't push him. I mean, don't try to go too quickly, because I think he's going to be good enough. You know, don't worry about it. Just let it happen. But I think he's going to be good enough to play here. We were in a little bit of a scholarship crunch. And I asked him if he would come here and pay his own way the first year, and then we'd give him a scholarship for the next 3 years. Well, we didn't get one of those guys that we thought we were going to get, so I had a scholarship. So a neat story is I called Luke one night, and I said, Luke, and this is in the spring of his senior year, I said, why don't you do me a favor? I said, I'd like you to go in and ask your mom and dad if you could have $1,000 just to go down to Myrtle Beach and blow it this weekend with your buddies as your last blowout. And Luke very seriously said, Coach, I don't know if I can do that. I said, well, then tell them that I just called you and I'm giving you a $25,000 scholarship, so at least they could do is give you $1,000 back. And he just laughed. He and his family had some fun with that. But just a great competitor. He sat in my office last spring. I have my player interviews after the season's over, and we talk about what they need to work on and the whole bit. And he looked at me right in the eye, very matter-of-factly. He said, Coach, I'm going to work harder than anybody. I'm just promising you that. Nobody will put in more work than I will put in. And he lived up to that, and so I'm just so happy for the young man.
Wow, that's a great story. Great story. So now going ahead to the Final Four, you're ninth, 20th for North Carolina. The other three coaches in this have never been there before, including who you're coaching against and Dana Altman with Oregon. Is there, if there is, not so much on game day, but just the preparation for it, is there an advantage, or what is the advantage to having been there before and kind of knowing the ropes?
Well, you know, I'm sure there's a little advantage because we have done it, and some of the guys on our team did it last year, so we know all the hoopla, and you get to put that in perspective. But, you know, when the ball's tossed up, kids get to play, and you never can tell what they're going to do. They're 19, 20, 21-year-olds, but perhaps there's one. But I'm thankful to be there. I'm flattered to be there. And I tell you what, those other three coaches, they're good friends. They're really good people. Dana Altman and I coached in the Big 8, Big 12 against each other, and we've been friends. His wife, Reba, they're really good people. Frank Martin, at times, is 180 degrees away from me, but we really have a great relationship. He's a bad guy in one thing, because one time, I'm telling you guys stories you probably don't need to hear, we're in Puerto Rico, and they take us out on these little kayaks, mm-hmm. and my wife has never been in a kayak in her life. And she said, do this, do that, do this, do this, do this, do that. And I finally got ticked off and just turned us over. And I told Frank about it, and he went and blabbed and told everybody else that I did it intentionally. So Frank and I have got some problems. And then Mark Few is a guy that I have gambled with in Las Vegas. We played golf together. He calls me a couple of years ago on his son's birthday to ask how the rules of one of our poker games we played together. So he's a great, great friend and one of the truly great coaches in our game. So I'm very flattered and very happy to be there with those three guys.
That's terrific. Yeah, again, as the guy with the Hall of Famer, and you're going back there here. And so now as you prepare for this, your team has been on a mission. Ever since that shot that beat you guys at the very end of last season, how much does that get brought up this week? You know what's going to be talked about. How does that – now that you've gotten it, ridden it all the way to the Final Four, how do you use that this week leading into the Final Four?
I won't say a single word about it because everybody else, that's all they're going to talk about, so I'll let that take care of it. But the guys know, and I asked them last year to use that as fuel, as motivation to work hard over the summer, to be the best player that we could be in and have trust and faith in our staff that we would try to put them into the position to be the best team we could be. And the kids really did their part, and yeah, they're talking about it a little more. In fact, maybe even a little more than I'd like for them to talk about. We have to be concerned about Oregon. That's who we have to be concerned about, so that'll be our focus.
We'll be back in a moment with Oregon coach Dana Altman's conversation with Russillo and Cannell. Welcome back to Courtside. Here's Oregon coach Dana Altman, who spoke with Ryan Russillo and Danny Cannell on Monday.
Coach, when I was watching you close out Kansas, I felt like up six, the offensive rebound, maybe take a deep breath, but it felt like that was your answer. How much more were you thinking about the agonizing hanging on to this in your answer as you realized you had to do a Final Four?
Well, we were running out of gas there. We got the big lead. We were up 18 with about 10 minutes to go, and we ran out of gas. Our guys got tired. Our depth isn't quite what it was with Chris Boucher, and so we had a period there offensively. We really struggled, but that was a big offensive rebound at 66-60. We ran a little bit more time off the clock, and then Tyler Dorsey hit a big three and put us back up nine with just under 2 minutes to go, and we were able to hold on. But we were out of gas there a little bit, and we were trying to struggle to the finish line.
How agonizing is that, watching it happen in front of you?
Well, it's difficult. There's no doubt about it. We had some possessions there where we weren't aware of the shot clock, and didn't get very good ball movement or person movement. So those possessions aren't fun to watch as a coach.
You could tell that your guys were kind of starting to celebrate, but you weren't ready to celebrate until it hit double zeros. Like, the game was completely over. You could read your lips saying, finish the game. When was the moment where you finally realized, hey, we're going to the Final Four?
Well, when they quit pressing us with about 30 seconds to go when we were up 14. And then that's when I knew that we were going. And it was a great feeling. It was fun to watch the guys, and everybody was pretty excited.
It was unbelievable to watch you guys run, what you guys have done this season. And it was really emotional to see Phil Knight get up there and cut down the nets. What did that mean to see for you to see him do that?
It meant a great deal. He's invested financially, obviously, with our program because of all the buildings that he's built here on campus, not only for athletics, but his footprint is all over the university, the law school. He just gave a lot of money for a new research center, the med center. He's given, he and Penny have donated generously to that. But he also, you know, he comes to about 10 of our games a year and watches us play and, you know, comes in the locker room and says hello. So he's been a great supporter. Regardless of what people say, he never meddles. He just watches and wants us to do well. Very supportive, and it was great to see him get up there. You know, it's the school's waited a long time for a Final Four. 1939 was a long time ago, so he and everybody else was pretty excited.
Dana Allman, head coach of the Oregon Ducks, headed to the Final Four. What is it about Phil Knight that people don't understand?
Well, I think the thing that they don't understand is just he wants the state of Oregon, the university, to do well, and he's very supportive. And like I said, he's not watching us over us every day. He just comes to the game. He's a casual fan. You know, he wants us to do well, but he hasn't been critical of our program in the 7 years I've been here. Been very supportive, and you know, he just is a great guy to have around. Obviously, because he is invested in the university. He's invested in our state.
When you were hired, I was reading about it today, and it was saying that you had a belief that you could, you know, Oregon had a type of program that could get to the Final Four. What made you believe in that, in the program itself?
Well, I thought, first of all, the Pac-12, the style of play, Danny, was really important because, you know, the league gets up and down. Washington and UCLA, Arizona, you know, we all get up and down. Utah, Colorado, it's a very up and down league. I thought we could attract players. We were just building a new arena at the time, which I thought would be very helpful. And you know, I just thought it had possibilities. And, you know, they've had some tradition here. They went to two Final Eights, two Elite Eights, you know, in the last 15 years before we got here. So it could be done. And fortunately, we've got the right group of guys that did it this year.
How are you going to handle all that North Carolina size in this matchup?
Going to be tough. Their offensive rebounding, their rebounding numbers are very impressive. And, you know, they've got, not only do they have two or three, they got four guys in there that, you know, their depth inside. And their guards are big. Their wings are big. Justin's 6'7" long. So they're just a big team. They get up and down, do a wonderful job in transition. So, you know, our work's going to really be cut out for us. We're going to have to play big. We're going to have to get on the boards. We cannot let them offensive rebound all night and get second chance opportunities. They score enough on the first opportunity. They don't need to get a lot of second opportunities.
How do you manage the emotions of celebrating, feeling these feelings of elation, winning, getting to the Final Four, and then starting to prep for a team like UNC?
Well, it's new for me, Danny. I'm not sure how we're going to do it. You know, we're just going to hopefully stay in the same routine we've had the last 2 weeks. It is a little different because everybody's patting the guys on the back, you know, congratulating them just to get to the Final Four. And we've got to change that thought process. You know, we're going to come play for a national title. You know, getting there is part of the battle, but now it just gets us in a position to play for a national title. And we've got another four-team tournament coming up just like we have the previous 2 weekends, and we've got to go play and compete, and and do our best and hopefully come out on top.
Coach, it was a lot of fun to watch. Really just dominant performance there against Kansas and throughout. And after a close call last year, I look forward to seeing you in Phoenix, all right?
Well, I appreciate it. It was a great weekend for us to beat Kansas in Kansas City. It was a lot of fun, and hopefully we'll continue to play well. Thanks guys.
We hope you enjoyed this special edition of Courtside. Another reminder to check out our Final Four preview podcast, which will be published this Friday. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Katz and Coach G. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts. Courtside with Katz and Coach G.